This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Annuity Straight Talk Podcast, episode number 103. My name is Brian Anderson, founder and creator of all things Annuity Straight Talk. Lots of episodes out there, lots of questions answered, many more to go, a lot of information people are looking for. I'm going to repeat myself where needed because a lot of people miss these. So I want everybody to know first and foremost that you might be just coming here, and then there are other people that have been listening to this for the whole time. So I'm going to speak to you as if you've been here the whole time, and if you need something else or you need a little bit of background, you're welcome to ask me, send me an email. Give me a call and I'll point you to the episodes that I think for almost everybody out there, there's probably two or three episodes you could listen to that are just going to really nail down what you want. And today I'm going to talk about something that has been kind of a constant topic. Not that I get specific questions about it, but it's crazy annuity indexes. You talk about index annuities and the guys that are showing you these illustrations are going to throw an index in there that you've never seen before. Okay, so the indexes inside an annuity are a material part of any contract you might analyze. So the indexes are going to tell you how the contract grows, translates how much money can be made, and then what type of expectations are reasonable. Several years ago, the options were simple. When I first started looking at these things, you just had a couple of maybe two, three options. S&P 500 variations, maybe Dow. As more companies entered the market and product options were expanded, almost every company slowly but surely came and added what they call proprietary indexes, where they'd partner with an investment firm, create an index that they could buy options on, and that investment firm would track it. And only that insurance company would have that index. So it happens a lot in the market. So a lot of times you're comparing between companies two contracts. It may not be an apples to apples comparison because one of them's got a Bloomberg index and the other one's got a Fidelity index or a Morningstar, any number of those things. So it was a competitive edge from, you know, on paper to say, oh, we got this index and nobody else has got. If it performed well, then they had bragging rights as well. So everybody ended up doing the same thing. I kind of wrote a newsletter that touches on this back in 2020. Index annuities have evolved. It talks about the expanded options people have inside the contracts. And the ones that I like right now, 12, 15 options. I used to say, go with something simple where there's only three so you don't have so many decisions to make. Then I realized over time, it was better to have more options because what I always say is there's a good yield with one of those indexes. So obviously every year we got to pick that. But like I said, used to be simple. S&P, Dow Jones, Russell, NASDAQ. Easy to understand, easy to track. If it's up, you make a piece of it. The new ones are a little bit harder to track. Some of them have ticker symbols, publicly traded. A lot of them are privately managed in-house by the financial institutions that created them. And it's always possible to track them, but it's not as easy when you're dealing with the proprietary indexes. They don't necessarily publish them. A lot of them that I look are really hard to find. Now, I'm not here to say this is a bad thing. It's just unfamiliar to most people. You take a product that's unfamiliar and you add a tracking index that's unfamiliar. And then when it doesn't follow the market, then you're scratching your head thinking, hey, maybe this is a load of crap, right? I've seen too many over-optimistic illustrations based on a brand new index that's only been around for a couple of years. I didn't say this necessarily in the newsletter, but they backtest all these things. So they put in the rules for the index and they run them over a historic market scenario. And you're getting something that's purely hypothetical. So people come through and say, well, this, based on this, this contract did really well. I could backtest $1,000 last week and be a millionaire today. So backtesting something just to show a 6, 7, 8% annual return, there's no great secret to that. If the algorithms are built to capitalize on market conditions in the past 10 years, I can guarantee you that it's not going to be the same in the next. Some of these indexes have had good years. I've recommended them in the past. Even when rates were low, several of these were able to produce double-digit returns for people, which was very nice. But claims, sales claims based on no legitimate data, like, they kind of drive me crazy. Most of the people who call saying they regret a purchase, I guess I did one of these a few years ago in a newsletter called Overrated Annuities, where these claim they come out back tested. Oh, it's 8% a year. We're giving you 120% of that. And it looks amazing. And then 2, 3 years into it, it's like that thing goes nowhere. And that's because a lot of people were expecting a brand new index to follow backdated performance for a future period. That index didn't exist, and economic conditions are going to be different going forward. Talked about some of these, or one of them specifically in a contract itself, BS annuity illustrations. That was earlier this year, back in March. So I'm going to explain something about these indexes and how you need to look at them and understand them. They're a blended mix of equities, commodities, and always have a fixed component of bonds, treasuries, or cash to reduce risk. The basic idea is to reduce exposure to down markets, just like regular investment management. Trade-off is that by reducing risk, the upside is somewhat limited as well. So if you have a quote-unquote ABC daily risk control 5% index, then you have an index that is rebalanced daily to maintain a volatility target of 5%. A lot of people see that 5% and they think, oh, is that the maximum I can earn, or is that the percentage I get? No, it's not. Bears no indication whatsoever what type of yield you can expect. It's a volatility target in the index. So the Chicago Board of Exchange Volatility Index, the VIX, is an index that measures relative risk in the market. It's a 30-day forward-looking index that tracks the expected moves in the market and the amount of volatility and the risk that's associated with. The indexes in the annuities use this or something similar to determine the percentage of assets that are exposed to equities markets in that index. So a 5% volatility target is easy to understand if it's explained properly, and nobody ever does it. It's not easy for me to do in just a paragraph. That's why it's worth a podcast, because it takes a little more time to do it the right way. A lot of agents fail to do this, or I'm guarantee a lot of them really don't understand it themselves. So if we're using the VIX, and let's say the VIX is at 20%, the average on, I think the VIX, the average over years, it's been around for a long time. I think the average volatility level is 12% volatility in the market. In the past couple of years, it's been hovering around 20. I've seen it up to 35, but let's say it was at 20%. Then a 5% risk control index would only have a quarter of its assets exposed to the market. So if the market rises in that when the volatility is expected to be high, you're only going to get a quarter of the gain in whatever equities make up that portfolio. It's not necessarily just the S&P 500, although S&P is used. Those are some of the better ones, I think, because they're still a little more straightforward than the ones that are, we use emerging markets and international, US-based, blended this and that. Those ones get a little tricky to understand. Since the VIX has been well above average for the past few years, most of these indexes have not been keeping pace with the market. I've seen risk control indexes. A lot of them are at 5%. There's one that I like that's 8%. There's one I really like that's at 10%. There's another one in a contract I don't use much that's a 12%. So if it has a higher volatility target, then you're going to get more exposure to the stock market, significantly more growth opportunity, but larger swings between the top and the bottom. So some of these 5% indexes, they can actually return positive yields when the market's down in value. It's not a bad thing, just to make sure you know how it works. So the other issue with these indexes is the cash component. So we talked about the equity side of it. If only a portion of the index is allocated to equities or commodities, there's blends of different things, international, emerging markets, US-based or domestic. You got gold, oil, any of the commodities, or sometimes just a commodities index, which kind of lumps them all together. So that's half of it, but you got the safe side of it, right? So if 20% of that index is allocated to the equities market or whatever component that is, then 80% of it's going to be in the risk control measure, the bonds, the treasuries, or the cash, right? So the performance of that part of the index can also be affected positively or negatively with changes in interest rates. And it's like you look at bonds, if rates rise, the value of the bond drops. If rates drop, then the value of the bond rises. So you could have a highly volatile stock market with rising interest rates like we saw last year. So you're not getting performance in the equity side. And the majority of the index is weighted toward a cash component that's losing value because of rising interest rates. And you're going to see a drop in those indexes. That is what happened in the past couple of years as rates crept up and the market's been all over the place. And again, I'm going to say it. Now, there was a point in time where it was a little bit up, but now again, market's about flat for the past 2 years. These indexes are about flat as well, but the rates came up, so some of them are even down in value. But the balance between equities and safe side has to be understood in order to explain performance over a period of time. I've heard from agents, I've heard from people, man, this thing just isn't going anywhere. We'll look at it. Because if you had an S&P 500 index, 50% of your portfolio, and the other 50% in an aggregate bond index, you probably are down in value too. You're flat over 2 years and the bonds are down in value, you probably lost money. So again, you still have the overall protection component of the annuity, but you got to play these things for the upside in the right market conditions. Now, blended indexes will do just fine if rates stay steady, volatility is low, and the market climbs. That's where you're going to see it. When there's lots of volatility and rates are all over the place, you're likely to see some lackluster performance. It's no different than a lot of managed portfolios, but because it's in an annuity, a lot of people gripe about it. The past 15 years have mostly seen steadily decreasing rates, except for 2018 and 2022. Back in 2020, when we had a precipitous drop, when the COVID lockdowns happened, precipitous drop in the treasury rate, a lot of these things spiked and people were really happy with them because that's where they're getting double-digit returns. And the S&P 500 was down, what, the top of it or the bottom of it was 30% down from the high. Over the past 2 years, rising rates along with a flat stock market has created dull performance in blended indexes. Some have done fine, but most have been flat at best or declined a fair bit at worst. Sets you up for the future. Most of the contracts I've seen over the past couple years, standard indexes like the S&P, just basic equity indexes that everybody knows about it. I think that's a prudent approach as well because we don't know what happens. But if you think, and I've talked to a lot of people, well, they think if the Fed's successful in crashing the economy, rates are going to drop. A lot of those blended indexes are going to see some outsized gains if that happens. So potentially there's a good play going forward. But again, you're making a bet on what happens over the next year, maybe 2 years. So anyway, not to say they're bad. Some of them, there's a couple of stories I have about this. Some of those indexes are just complete garbage. I remember there's one, a Janus index. We had it in 2020 and the thing dropped when the COVID lockdowns happened and then it flatlined after that. And I had one of my clients that had that in the contract looked at it and said, I think it just died and they just stopped managing it. But you notice inside an annuity contract, an index annuity contract, the company will have a little clause saying we reserve the right to remove an index for whatever reason, right? Sometimes those indexes might just go away. I like to stick to S&P risk control or just straight up S&P options. It's easy to understand. The S&P risk control, 8%, 10%, Midland and Mass Mutual Ascend have those. Those are very good performers over time. But again, a lot of these crazy ones, and the next story I'll tell you is I've talked about how commissions affect annuity sales and the third-party management companies that are in between the insurance company and the agent and consumer, okay? So agent and consumer, we're supposed to sit on the same side of the table here. That's why I try not to sell. I say, hey, listen, let me understand what you want, and let's sit on the same side of the table and figure this out. If you want an annuity, let's go get the best one, the one that suits you the best. Okay. Pretty simple. I did that with a guy this morning in 35 minutes. Boom, he gets it. Holy cow. I'm not sure he's going to buy it. I told him you have to wait a little bit of time. But anyway, there's one company that creates the indexes and then pitches them to an insurance company, gets an insurance company to include it in the contract. And they've been doing it for, 7 or 8 years, I think. And what's interesting is I'd always get an email. Look at this new index we have that produces double digit returns every year for the past 10 years. There's your back testing again, right? And then 6 months later, they'd come out with another one. We got a brand new index. It's all this stuff. And after a few of those, I thought, why would I jump on this? I never did. Why would I jump on this? If I know for a fact that you're going to come out with the next best thing in 6 months. So I didn't jump on those. And the company's kind of still at it. Or they slowed down their production a little bit. Maybe they got one that hit. I don't know, but I don't chase trends. I just try to explain and help people understand what factors are at work here. It's really straightforward. And so you got straight up indexes in an index annuity, indexes that you know that are tracked daily, that come across your news on the radio, right? And then you've got the blended index with a cash component, and both sides of those things can move. So you need to understand what risk control means. You need to understand what risks there are with the cash component. Even if it's safe, it can lose value. Now, if it's just straight cash, some of those do a little bit better. But again, they're designed to create consistent returns over time. And that's the benefit of doing so. There are certainly some times when they really work. And there are a handful of them out there that have never worked, probably never will. So anyway, episode 103, Crazy Annuity Indexes. Hope you guys learned a little bit more about how these contracts work. My name is Brian Anderson. Please like, subscribe, or comment your favorite podcast platform on YouTube. We got a lot of new subscribers. Go ahead and share this with your friends. If you know anybody else that would like to see it, share it with an advisor you're talking to. Maybe he'd like to rebut. I don't know. I'd love to have an argument on the podcast. It doesn't have to be an argument. How about a discussion? That'd be good. More beneficial. So anyway, but I'm here. You can schedule a call with me anytime at the top right corner of any page on annuitystraighttalk.com. I'm going to stop listening to the phone numbers. I'm getting so many calls. Can't get back to them all. The best thing to do if you want to nail me down is go schedule an appointment. This has been episode 103. I certainly appreciate you guys stopping by. Everybody have a great week. I'll be back with number 104 next week. Okay, thanks. Bye.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only and does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with a qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the insurance company.